Hello, and welcome to AV Forums Movies Podcast, the podcast where we barely attempt to talk about the biggest releases from an AV perspective, but almost always get sidetracked. I am joined today by Florence Pugh's stunt double, Kaz Harlow.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
And Ray Winston's Jelly Deals caterer, Simon Crust.
Oh, I was going to say who are. That's not really cocky, is it? For some strange reason.
Not all. Yeah. Hello, my friends. And are you both obsessive Marvel movie fans, the two of you?
I was.
Oh, dear. That's a bad sign. Kaz?
I am. Yeah.
Good. What's the best Marvel movie then? Howard the Duck or the unreleased Roger Corman Fantastic Four?
Oh, Fantastic Four, without a doubt.
What, out of those two? Come on.
Those are the only two. I ask because today we are going to be talking about the summer blockbuster hit of 2016, Black Widow. But before we get too involved in that, we are going to tell you a bit about some competitions that you can currently enter on the site. Kaz, would you like to take it away?
Sure. We've actually got almost 24 competitions running at the moment. Those include half a dozen 4K competitions, Basic Instinct, In the Line of Fire, Final Fantasy, Snatch, and Almost Famous. And Blu-ray competitions for things like the complete four seasons of Winona Earp and Criterion's July titles, and a whole bunch more. I'm not going to run through all of them, but there's a lot of competitions running, more to add. So go take your pick. A few of them are Patreon exclusives, so watch out for that, and please join, because you will get some. I don't think there are many patrons who haven't got something, and if there are, send me a PM and tell me what competitions you're entering.
not that we are going to rig it, Kaz.
No, of course not. And we've also got a podcast exclusive competition to win a copy of Ghost in the Shell, Scarlett, the one starring Scarlett Johansson, just to make it vaguely relevant. So stay tuned for the question that will reveal the answer to that.
Sounds pretty awesome. And just to echo Kaz's sentiments, please do sign up to be one of our patrons. If you are enjoying the content that we're producing, you can go to patreon.com/AVForums and sign up for £3 a month, and you get exclusive content. You get to know about videos that are coming up. You get a say sometimes in what we talk about here. So well worth it. Oh, and also there are usually discounts on merch that come with it too. So definitely worth it. But onto the main event, I think. We watched the long-delayed Black Widow at the cinema and on Disney Plus, and that is today's feature presentation.
If you enjoy the podcast on YouTube, then please like and subscribe. If you're listening to the audio version, then please leave us a rating on your podcast app. We invite you to email questions and feedback to podcast@avforums.com and join in with this episode's discussion thread in the podcasts forum at AV Forums.
So we are about to tell you what we think of Black Widow, but we also want to know what you think. So we are asking you to name your favorite Marvel movie. Shove your answers in the live chat if you're listening live, and we may shout you out. Or if you are listening later, comment on the forum thread at avforums.com and we will engage you in lively debate. Simon, you watched Black Widow at home, didn't you?
I did. I watched it on Disney Plus.
Tell me what you thought about it on Disney Plus.
Okay. Before I do that, I would like to talk about the character of Black Widow herself, as portrayed in the films, because she's slightly different to the comics. So she's an assassin and she's a spy. She has no superpowers whatsoever. All she's got is her guile. She's got wit, charm. She's got her training. She's got her sexual prowess, her fighting skill, her grit, determination, and unlimited courage. She was an Avenger. She stood side by side with powered individuals against hordes of interdimensional aliens. She stood against a manic AI hell-bent on destroying the world. He fought a titan who wanted to kill half the life in the universe. And when that didn't pan out as it should have done, she even sacrificed herself to save all the lives that were taken. She's the very definition of a hero and has been deserving of her own film for years. But you know what? When it finally happened, that was the film they chose. A meandering, tonally off suckfest that really wasn't about Black Widow at all, in my opinion. She'd earned the right to have a great send-off, and she deserved better, and she deserved more.
Wow, that just don't hold back, Simon.
Mate, I didn't. I don't, because honestly, that film, a Marvel film throughout, that's all it was, a Marvel film, and she deserved better. She deserved better, really.
That's I'm surprised. I'm not that surprised. I'm a little surprised.
I'm loving it.
Yeah, absolutely, totally. We need more of this stuff. Kaz, you're gonna completely disagree with Simon, aren't you?
No. I one out of ten. That's it. I'm just gonna go straight to the score. I gotta go now.
That's it. We've done the numbers.
Oh, you know what? I see it. I see everything that Simon has said, because I remember Black Widow from the comics. I actually remember her being quite nefarious and planting all kinds of things in Iron Man's bloodstream, and actually occasionally being bad.
She is a lot more grey, or has been a lot more grey, yeah, like morally in the comics, traditionally, for sure.
I think she's definitely done some pretty nasty things. And I would agree with everything Simon says about her being a hero who's done a lot in the movies and them needing a fitting send-off. Did I ever think that she'd get one? Probably not. And did I think that they would use this movie to introduce a replacement? Yes, I did. With all that in mind, I was content with the work they did to make it not too disrespectful. So I do agree with what Simon's saying, but I suppose I knew all of that. I didn't expect this to be a fitting send-off to Black Widow. A fitting send-off to Black Widow was in Infinity War. And what we have here, or in Endgame. Mm-hmm. In Endgame. And what we have here is an introduction to a new Black Widow, but it could have been so much worse. It could have been a cameo from Scarlett Johansson. It could have been, you know, utterly irrelevant. But I think they tried to make it a bit more interesting by giving it this curiously dysfunctional family vibe. I do agree that does give it an odd tone, but I don't actually mind that. And this is coming from someone who was, I think, partly hoping this would be more Winter Soldier. For me, the best Marvel film was always Winter Soldier. Probably will always be Winter Soldier. Blew me away. Loved what they did with it.
For sure, up there, definitely.
It's a tremendous movie. And unlike the others, I think the other bests for me, it's one of those rare ones which is neither an origin story like Iron Man, which I happen to also favour, nor a build-up of 10 movies. So everyone obviously cites Endgame and Infinity War, but they would be nothing without 20 movies before them.
Yeah.
So they are tremendous, but they're reliant upon having introduced 50 characters and giving them all some screen time and making it all work, which is an accomplishment, but they'd be nothing without what came before them.
That's true, but it's also... lots of people are hearkening back to Phase 1 with Black Widow because it feels like a... or not entirely, but it feels like a movie free of the burden of having to be part of a setup for something else. They do that a little bit at the end.
Yes. Yes, I can see that. It is...
in general, it feels like a movie that it doesn't have to worry too much about, you know, six movies down the line. Like
No, it doesn't. Yeah. I think you're right.
I think that's cool.
I think it's good that they distance themselves from that, divorce themselves from it. And I got around the fact it wasn't going to be another Winter Soldier. And I loved the the family vibe. I was totally on board with what David Harbour was up to. And she's not a replacement for Black Widow, but she kind of is her own character who will fill a void, if that makes sense. Without
yeah, being she will. She will not be stepping into role of Black Widow. No,
but Florence Pugh nailed it.
Yeah, she did a great job. I really, really enjoyed her.
Snarky as all hell, but you know her own character, and in many respects very similar because of their
mutual upbringing.
Yeah. But also in a kind of a sisterly way, very antagonistic towards each other, which led to a great vibe about, you know, taking the mickey of Scarlett Johansson's posture and posing and everything that goes with it. And yeah, I loved it. I mean, I just the scene alone where Florence Pugh talks about, they have a conversation about the new vest she's wearing and all the pockets it has. I would have watched a whole movie.
I love that too. The issue comes, doesn't it, when you have to give the caveat that the movie that you're describing there, Kaz, lasts for an hour.
Yeah, okay. And then you've got to blow stuff up and you've got to fly through the air with dodgy CG. And yeah, I get it. I'm okay with that, though. It's Marvel. Yeah. What are you going to do?
I certainly wasn't expecting anything different. But I was kind of hoping.
They had the perfect opportunity to do something different, didn't they?
It was set up in a way that they didn't have to go the super bombastic route. Nah. But absolutely, they didn't have to. But they did because, you know.
Someone's written it somewhere.
Yeah.
You have to do it in every Marvel movie. You've got to go blow some stuff up.
Yeah. The third act CGI fight is like the bane of not just Marvel, but like superhero movies in general.
I think they can do clever ways to have it, but not have it. Like at the end of Doctor Strange.
Yes. You know, yeah, that's a really good example, actually.
Big, because it's battling a massive planet god thing, but it's clever.
Yeah.
Not reliant on just stupid
action. But they also do have the parallel battle with Caecilius at the same time, so they sort of have their cake and eat it in that movie. But
do that then, I think is the solution if you want to go down the anyway. I'm okay with them having to resort to that, even though it was silly. I'm not sure I loved the setup of what happened to the Red Room or repositing it as some child sex slave analogy or whatever. I mean, it's neither here nor there for me, but it didn't seem to fit what we knew so far, which is
the problem.
This maybe matriarchal society was something that I got the impression that the widows prided themselves on, and I'm sure we saw that earlier on in the saga.
In that's how it's portrayed in Agent Carter.
I guess I thought that they could have been a bit more proud of it rather than reframing it.
Yeah,
I
think that's fair enough. And I do think someone's already said on the chat to BMOX81, it like, is there anything wrong with a mid-tier Marvel movie? And I think that's where your mileage is going to vary, isn't it? I mean, somebody said that they've seen enough of that stuff and they don't need any more of it, but at the same time there's still plenty of people out there, even just post pandemic, the numbers for Black Widow have been
crazy,
real good. So there is an appetite for that formulaic Marvel thing.
But you need it. Because 10 mid-tier Marvel movies, maybe with one or two gems in it, gets you an Endgame.
That's it.
That's how the maths works out. So you go and see them all. Sure, only 5 minutes of it is relevant, really relevant to the overreaching arc. But it sets up characters who are coming back.
You're right. And up until phase three, that was the Marvel strategy. You look at phase one and phase two, and there are a handful of good films there. Yes.
And there's Iron Man 2.
Yeah, exactly. There's Iron Man 2, there's The Incredible Hulk, there's Thor 2. You know, they had, in those first years, to my mind, a lot more misses than hits. And I would put this above those. I thought it was fine. I did say, for the purposes of the podcast, that I was going to pretend like it was like a masterpiece, just for a bit of variety, you know.
11 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was sensitive and emotional. It discussed the delicate topic of intergenerational trauma by breaking down the nuclear family, or, you know, replacing safety and love with danger. It tackled power struggles and objectification and empowerment of women. It, you know, thought-provoking images of like trans masculinity in the character of Redacted. And it addressed, you know, the important issues of passing, having to grapple with your gender identity, straight washing, cis washing, hidden powers of society. What I'm saying is, it was better than Citizen Kane.
I think you saw a different film.
Yeah, not as good as Paddington 2.
Just because you saw it at the cinema, it doesn't make it a better film.
It was one of the best movies I've watched at home. Like one of the ones that Disney have come off at. You know what I mean? Like, if I'd seen it at the cinema, maybe it would have had a different vibe. But for me, I've seen a lot of these Disney Plus churns out, Cruella or whatever. It's and they're all good, but I watched this and I thought I could have seen this at the cinema, and a lot of the others I was quite glad to see at home. I've seen it because I've seen everything at home for 18 months now, apart from Tenet. And so there haven't been many where I'd have gone, yeah, that would have worked better at the big screen. I'd have enjoyed that more at the big screen. And this is one of them. This and maybe Godzilla versus Kong, for very different reasons. But I would say that, considering I am, you know, knee deep in loving WandaVision, finding Falcon the Winter Soldier perfectly acceptable, but distinctly average, and
very average,
absolutely adoring Loki. I mean, who knows how it'll turn out at the end, but
I do.
Okay, apart from Simon, who knows? But yeah, I've really enjoyed watching Loki. So for me, Black Widow feels a little bit like a TV movie to tie those all together and to give us a bridge to where we're going to go next in this cross-platform TV and cinema universe. And
so we're looking definitely at it
as a bit more that level.
Sure.
I'm maybe not as disappointed that it's not a Winter Soldier. But yeah. I do think that it would be nice if I knew what the next Winter Soldier is going to be, because I'm not sure it's going to be Shang-Chi.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know what we're going to expect from Shang-Chi. But we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the Phase 4 plans and the continuing existence and dominance of Marvel at the cinema. But I just to go back to something Simon said, which was watching it at the cinema doesn't make it a better film. I 100% agree with that, but it does make it a different experience.
I would agree with that, yes.
So I think I enjoyed it. What did I give it? A 7? I think I gave it a 7. Because I was feeling quite warmly towards it when I came out.
It's at least a 7.1.
Well, I think I'm going to maybe dial it back to a 6.8 because,
because of Ray Winston.
Because of pure. Do you know what? I wrote in the review. Ray Winston, don't get me wrong, he was a problem. Like, he was not good.
He was so bad, even the main character smashed her head on the desk.
You know what? He has physicality. When he's throwing punches, the guy, he's got a boxing background. He looks like he can throw a punch, and it looks like it really hurts. But I have no idea why they didn't just make him Cockney.
Yeah,
like, they had no reason to get into. It wasn't just the accent. He said things like, sort it. I mean, that's not Russian dialogue said, which just happens to have been said in a Cockney accent.
No, this is Ray tweaking his dialogue.
Yeah, it is. It's going, you know, I know my character. He'd say, sort it. You know, pain in my ass. Sort it. It's like, that's not Russian dialogue, Ray.
Yeah.
So why not just make him Cockney? Make him a Cockney who's been undercover with a bunch of undercover agents. Perfect cover for him, and he's graduated to taking care of these.
The other route to go down is just do not address it. Just don't mention it. Like,
don't mention that he's Cockney. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. We've spoke on the podcast before about Sean Connery's accent in The Hunt for Red October. He doesn't have one, and that doesn't matter particularly.
Oh, but they address it.
They do.
They address it. Yeah, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
It doesn't. You don't need to force people to do an accent, I think, is what is the point I'm trying to say. Like, it doesn't necessarily ruin immersion, because you're already suspending your disbelief that we're hearing in English and not Russian, you know? So it's not a massive... It was just such a misguided...
It was a bad one.
Boy, oh boy. The scows of power. Thanks, Ray. That was an interesting one. Good line, Reed. Yeah. Can we do that one? No, we'll just move on.
Yeah.
Before we do move on, the one thing, Kaz, you mentioned the family dynamic, and I enjoyed that too. That was something that I found fun, and I got quite a lot out of that. But the thing that made me feel most warmly to it was the action. I was really surprised by how physical the action in it looked for a Marvel movie. I'm just so used to seeing a lot of, you know, wire work or CGI and there was a lot of like physical stunt work in this that really looked like it landed on a couple of occasions. Not before can I remember seeing them, maybe in The Winter Soldier, but I can't really remember seeing hand-to-hand combat that made me wince in a Marvel movie before, and there was some of that. Are you gonna at least, Simon? Are you gonna at least allow?
Well, I mean, that harks back to what I said right at the beginning. She doesn't have superpower, so you don't need all these bells and whistles, do you? It's literally somebody punching somebody else. Mm-hmm. And if you get that right, then they did get that right. The only thing I, you know, slightly take exception to is when she's falling off buildings and getting up afterwards. That doesn't.
I quite like that. She,
very
man,
John Wick 3.
She hit everything on the way down. I quite enjoyed that. Yeah, yeah. So let's, because we've got quite a lot to talk about with upcoming Marvel projects, and I think everybody is okay. Well, we're maybe not in agreement, but generally,
I thought I like the term mid tier. Yeah. We'll go with that, shall we?
Yeah, let's say that the consensus here is that it is mid-tier Marvel, and how much you like that will depend on you.
It looked good.
Yeah.
Look good, actually. Yeah,
I did. Yeah, maybe.
Well, bit compressed. I found it slightly compressed at the beginning, certainly when it first started, but towards the end it livened up a bit and got a bit, the colours got a bit poppier and the blacks looked a bit better.
The snow scene was pretty good.
Hmm.
I thought the
mental, but
the CGI explosions were bad, I thought.
I didn't have as much problem until the final air scene. I don't want to give too much away, but the air scene
at the end,
even my kids were saying, they're not really in the air, are they?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, they're really not. If you want that, you have to watch Mission Impossible. And they were like, they're really in the air there. And I was like,
pretty much.
this isn't that. This is.
So,
but generally I found the effects quite good. I mean, I thought the whole snow sequence was quite well done with the helicopter and the early stage action sequences were quite small and low key and had some impact. Mm-hmm. I thought the soundtrack was good. That first crash early on came as a pretty big shock.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not getting into specifics. I enjoyed it. I'm interested to see. I mean, it's difficult to quantify it because two of us saw it at home, one saw it at the cinema, but the concept of home versus cinema, I wonder whether some of the picture quality lacking at the cinema wasn't as noticeable at home.
I mean, you and I saw it in HDR and Atmos, presumably.
Yeah.
What you would have seen it standard definition? Tom?
Oh no, I saw it at the iSense, the Odeon iSense. So that's
you could taste the rain.
Yeah, that it's so
you got Atmos, but it would have been HDR 10, would it? Just would have been. It was.
Yeah. The ODI license. Yeah, it is.
Oh wow.
Yeah, okay. It's really, really lovely looking screen. But yeah, so the way I saw it, I didn't notice. But then I tend not to when I'm in the cinema because everything else is black around me and it's more immersive. It's difficult to be as critical on that front, or I find it difficult to be as critical on that front. But I think, unless there are any objections, I think we'll move on to talking about the Marvel. And I think we'll just, normally maybe we'd say we recommend it, we don't recommend it, but I think in this case, it depends on what you want. And if you want a Marvel formula, Marvel movie that is basically inconsequential, then check it out.
Check it out, yeah.
But if you can wait until, is it October that it appears free?
Yeah, free on Disney. Watch Disney, it now.
Well, free, part of your Disney Plus subscription. Then no one will blame you for waiting.
No, I mean, watch it then. I definitely wouldn't put people off watching it because undoubtedly it's going to be intrinsic, even though only 5 minutes of it might be intrinsic. It might, you know, it does introduce characters.
It's only the post-credit sequence, really.
But it does introduce a character we're probably going to see quite a lot of. So, that's... But yes, yeah, let's move on.
let's talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a whole, because I asked on the forums, I asked the users what their opinions were on the MCU basically as it currently stands, and I asked about the TV shows that are currently ongoing, Marvel's use of indie directors, and whether or not we actually are still bothered about the MCU as this like entertainment behemoth. But it's definitely changing, right? It's not what it was. It is now.
If that is a function of the pandemic as
almost certainly
has changed their direction of where they want to go, because the TV shows, the latest ones rather than the ones that are on Netflix, but the latest shows, Loki, Falcon, Winter Soldier,
the Winter Soldier,
what was the other one?
WandaVision.
Okay, so I really enjoyed WandaVision. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very out there. Mm-hmm. And for the first four, maybe five episodes, when you didn't really know what was going on, I thought it was terrific. It sort of fell apart towards the end, like all these things kind of do. You get the big CGS cypher that we've been talking about. But I really like that because it was different. Okay. Didn't really get on with Falcon and Winter Soldier. Far too generic for my liking. Didn't really do much for me at all.
It's mid-tier.
TV. But Loki, on the other hand, again, is something a bit different. It's not following that tried and tested route of, you know, plot A leads to plot B leads to plot C. You've got all sorts of different things going on, particularly these middle episodes. When he goes to the void, I'm going to say it's a fair spoiler, but when he goes to the void, not giving anything away.
Yeah.
And you meet all the other Lokis because there are, you know, he's messing around in time. First episode, didn't really like it, didn't get on with it because messing with time, hang on a minute, he's already there, he's done, we know what happens to him, how can they, didn't really, but stick with it because it gets very, very entertaining. Hiddleston is magnificent, absolutely magnificent in the role, and the different characters he plays in it, he's brilliant, I love him. And I have seen the last one because I watched it tonight, just before turning this on.
Satisfying conclusion. If it is, it'll be, I would say, the first of the TV series to have a satisfying conclusion.
I don't think so.
Well, as long as he doesn't use a thruster pack to pick up a car.
It's I would think if you're a massive Marvel comic book fan, then you will get a lot more mileage out of it than I did.
Hooray!
Because of the actual villain behind the piece, but
Don't spot Simon.
No, well, I'm not going to say anything else.
You're getting very close here. Simon!
But we know this because the entire thing is a setup for the future films. And that is how it's played out. And I think they could have done more.
Well, going from that, I think that this is where Marvel may surprise everybody. I'm not putting money on it, but what I'd love to see is the same. It's the same blindsided feeling you have going in with Phase One and Phase Two. All of a sudden, you know, Shield suddenly turns out to have serious problems, and Captain America goes on the run. You know, and it completely changes the whole face, the whole landscape of the Marvel Universe. And you didn't know that was going to happen going into Winter Soldier. And there have been several points across the universe where little movies, little tweaks, little things happen, change the landscape. I appreciate the biggest ones were probably in that and Civil War and, you know, maybe the Avengers team-ups. But Marvel could have some clever ideas in store.
They could
blow your mind with
where
it's
going
to go.
I think... They're placing a big risk, well, a risk on creating importance from the TV shows, having pivotal events happen in the TV shows. And the forums user Gariok raised a really interesting point, which I think is the general uncertainty of what is now considered canon among the Marvel TV shows. And I think obviously I've seen them all because I'm a loser, but this could start to become a problem for a few viewers and maybe even for the franchise as a whole. You know, thinking back a few years before Star Wars The Force Awakens, people went nuts when they threw the Star Wars Extended Universe out the window, all the novels and the games and the comics that came before Force Awakens, and people were not happy. Like, this is including me. Like, I was one of the people like venting my, how can they do this? Grand Admiral Thrawn. Anyway, in retrospect, it kind of needed doing because it removed this barrier where like Star Wars was this niche nerd thing with billions of stories to just the core films and the Clone Wars, I guess. And suddenly it was like accessible again to a new generation of people watching it for the first time. And I think if people are looking
that, they don't have to do that. They're Disney. Well... they have no, what I mean is they have Disney Plus. So what they're saying is come to Disney Plus, you can have all the movies, you can have all the TV shows that are relevant. It's up to you if you want to watch them, just like it's up to you if you want to watch all the movies before Endgame or be one of these people who occasionally pop up even on the forum and say, hey, I just watched Endgame. It's really good. I didn't watch any of the others, but it was good fun. Do you think I should go back and watch the others?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that's a decent point, but I have seen people talk about like how... intimidating it can be to say like there are also all of these TV shows that I feel like I now have to go and watch, because like you say, they are all on Disney Plus. But the fact of the matter is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for example, or Peggy Carter that we talked about before, those are now like soft canon. They do not have any bearing on the MCU anymore, even though that's how they started.
Yeah.
The first series, certainly of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and second, and maybe third.
Tied in, yeah.
Tied in with Winter Soldier, didn't they?
Nominally tied in. Like, the events of the movie were discussed. Hydra was more of an impact in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But probably not the other way around.
That's why I'm trying to say, like, you did not have to watch the TV shows to watch the movies. No. But it's getting to the point now with Disney Plus.
You kind of have to.
Maybe you do. Like, we don't know, because Black Widow is this standalone thing that's not really anything to do with Phase 4 specifically, you know.
But that's what I'm saying. Maybe you don't. Because there's still people out there who'll watch Endgame and not watch the other 20 films. So maybe you don't, and maybe it's just up to us. I honestly can't imagine anything in Falcon and the Winter Soldier being necessary. It's just if you happen to have watched it and then watch the next movie, probably some of the gaps are filled in. Probably some of the characters are better fleshed out. You're going to wonder why they're best friends or not, or whatever it is. You know, like it's, but it's not going to be a big wonder. It's not going to be like, oh, I've missed a whole thing. And so maybe that's what they're playing on. I appreciate what Simon's saying about the end of Loki, but I bet you anything, if it plays into, I don't know, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Well, that's what it's heading towards.
People will be able to walk into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, and there'll be enough of a soft landing for you to
You're probably right.
Off the bat.
You are probably right.
So I think there is a valid concern, but I think Disney are clever enough to play it both ways. And it's up to us. And I'll watch them all. I'm happy to watch more.
I mean, you know, likewise. Yeah. I think it would maybe benefit from them doing for Marvel what they did for Star Wars, and just say, like, what do they call the Star Wars excised canon? The Legends. And if they did that for Marvel, because you could then... Because again, like something like the Netflix Defenders series nominally mention the events of Avengers.
They're going to do it, aren't they? They're just not going to do it that way. They're going to call it the multiverse.
Yeah,
the multiverse.
Yeah,
the Netflix Defenders exist.
Yeah, you're right.
So I'm okay with that. They're just not going to say it's not canon. It's just not canon in this universe.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay. You're probably right about that.
It's a very good out, isn't it?
Yes.
Very good out.
We're gonna get blindsided. Seriously, in a year's time, we're gonna be wondering what all of this discussion was about. They're gonna pull something out of the bag that they've been planning all this way along, and it'll be Spidey, or it'll be multiverse, or it'll be the next Thor movie, and it'll be just amazing. And then they'll roll out another Avengers, and we'll have wondered why there were any doubts. It's just COVID put a year spanner in the works, and
yeah,
kicked him a little bit.
Is it not too much overload, though? Are we getting too much? Are we not kind of fed up with it?
Well, a lot of people are, I think. I think a lot of people are. And I think there's lots of people at the end of Endgame said, that's it, I'm over it now. Like, I've seen that story. That's good enough for me. I can move on. You know, looking at Disney Marvel planning the next 16,000 films into the future, people are going to look at that and go...
Looking at it going, who the hell are these characters? Never heard of them.
Sure, absolutely. I completely agree with all of that. And it dials back to the same people who didn't watch the build-up to Endgame. If they don't want to watch the next 20 films and 20 TV shows, fine. And then they'll watch another Avengers movie and go, that was tremendous. I wonder where all these great characters come from. Maybe I should go back and watch them all. And they can do that as well. I'll watch it because, you know what, they came up with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I read the comics. I didn't read those comics. And when I came into Guardians of the Galaxy, it was very nearly the first Marvel movie I didn't see at the cinema, and it was tremendous. So they'll get a lot of time out of me on the most random characters. I mean, God, Iron Man was never anyone's best Marvel character. Not really.
No.
I loved him as a kid, but I didn't ever think of him as a big character. He was a B-League character at best. He went on to champion the first like three phases of the Marvel universe. So
But that was the actor, wasn't it?
It was the actor. Character. So maybe they'll find that in other people, and we haven't quite seen it yet. Or maybe they'll figure a way of, I don't know, replacing Brie Larson. I mean, I don't know. Something could be in the world.
Yeah, that's a great shout.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was definitely in the position that people are saying that, like, after Endgame, I was like, yeah, that's, you know, I watch Spidey movies and I watch Doctor Strange movies. Those are my guys, you know, those are my two guys. And everything else I'm not that fussed about. I've said elsewhere that if they'd stuck to their release schedule of Black Widow followed by Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I would have been out. Like, that would have been me. Yep, I'm definitely done with Marvel now. It's only through serendipity that they had to or decided to air WandaVision first.
Yeah.
And it was so nuts and so out there and so weird that I was like, oh, they've still got some
ideas
over
something
there.
Yeah, they've still got something. Yeah,
and the same has happened again with Loki.
Yeah.
And You know, I thought, do I care about what happens to Loki?
I really do. The music, the style.
The music is awesome. Yeah.
It really reminds me of Legion. Do you think either of you guys watched that? Legion, that same sort of like 70s aesthetic, but with crazy technology.
Yeah, Legion is great. It's an Aubrey Plaza away from being like Legion, yeah. all it needs is
Aubrey Plaza and Jermaine Clement. That's who it
needs. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, anybody who's not seen Legion, it is tangentially linked to the X-Men movies, but not really, only in name. And it was an FX TV show, ran for 3 seasons.
It's on Disney as well, isn't it, at the moment?
Is Legion, has it moved to Disney now? Oh, I guess it must have done, because it was Fox.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Have a look on Disney Plus. Super recommend it. Of all the spin-off Marvel shows, Daredevil Season 1 and Legion Seasons 1 and 3 are amazing.
There's a British TV show, Utopia. Legion is like X-Men by way of Utopia for me.
That's a good description, actually.
Just so unpredictable and so mental, but also about superpowered people. So something like that. Well, what are we looking forward to in upcoming movies then? Is there stuff? I mean,
the Spidey one for me, really.
Not Doctor Strange. Ooh, the strange.
Maybe. Scarlet, it's a bit strange. Scarlet. Well, yeah.
And so the multiverse.
Seeing the lead up into it.
Characters, yeah. Or Eternals. I mean, let me tell you
a little story. This is quite interesting.
is it about Ray Winston?
No, it's not. It's about the filming of Doctor Strange. Engelbert Cabbage Patch was filming down in Somerset, and he came across, I got a Paolo moved down there, and he came across some fans, and they filmed him saying, "Hello, I am here. Yes, I am actually really here." And that turned out to be my goddaughter. So, claim to fame. Filmed, Engelbert Cumberbatch on his while he was filming down in Somerset for that film. There you go.
Well, then you have to see the next one.
I've got to go and see it now. Yeah, I've got a connection that I have to go and see it now.
Thor, the new Thor, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man are the obvious ones that are going to be unmissable.
Do we think there's going to be too many baddies in the new Spider-Man?
Yes, no. But that is a Spider-Man tradition.
Yeah, and they're going to get it right this time. They're going to do it this time.
And the same actors as well.
But they're going to get it right because they're going to multiverse.
Well, Doc Ock was right. He was okay the first time, he's been the best
Spidey villain so far, and I think second only to the only person second to him I would say is Willem Dafoe. Like, Willem Dafoe had a bad suit, but he was a really good Norman Osborn,
and he was a bit more interesting, a little bit damaged. But when he put the suit on, he was a comedian.
Yeah. It was a Power Rangers suit, and it was not good.
It was a Power Rangers suit. I had the toy. It's bad. So those, Spider-Man, I mean, Doctor Strange, Thor, all could be interesting. The unknowns are Eternals and Shang-Chi.
But they could turn out to be Guardians of the Galaxy type, couldn't they? They could be good enough to go turn people around.
I mean, that's my line. I mean, I definitely have been peddling that they're going to be like Guardians.
But
there's no humour, so that's the risk.
Yeah, I haven't.
So yeah. Shang-Chi, I mean, Guardians even had that soundtrack. Shang-Chi better have something special, and it better not be Abomination. That makes no sense.
I'm sure my ignorance now, but do we know who's directing Shang-Chi?
That's just because we haven't looked it up.
I can tell you who's directing the others, but I don't really know. Like, that's on me, I guess. Just because I
Destin massively Daniel care. Cretton.
Okay.
Destin Daniel Cretton, who did Just Mercy.
Okay.
And did Short Term 12.
Like, I don't know what that is.
That is the film where Brie Larson isn't an arsehole.
The one film. Wow.
It's the film where Brie Larson is absolutely fantastic and really good in it and had my attention for being Captain Marvel.
Brie Larson. She's amazing. She's a great actress.
She's great in Short Term 12. I loved her.
She's also great 12. In Room.
She's great in Room. I love her in Room. She's just anyway. It's the director behind Short Term 12.
Okay.
So it's got my attention a little bit more now.
So are we talking like another
indie
director? So that and Eternals. I mean, I don't know if you can call Chloe Zhao indie anymore now that she's won like a Best Picture.
You can. Come on.
But you know, Nomadland and what was her previous movie? It'll come back to me. Anyway,
one word, but yes.
Small scale. Yeah. And are indicative of Marvel's or the MCU's passion for picking up these indie talents and basically forcing them to make a CGI action mess.
I mean, you got to admit, for as much as they are indie, it's debatable how much of an effect it has. Because you could point to, for me, Thor Ragnarok, and that is where the flavor is fantastic.
It's true, and it doesn't look like a Taika Waititi movie.
No,
but it does sound like one.
Yeah, and it is very retro, and it's. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's taken over a little bit there, so it works.
I think it works for them more often than it doesn't. Looking at the list of directors where they've taken someone from like humble beginnings and lifted them up. Like we've talked about Guardians loads, like James Gunn he started his career working for Troma, which is the lowest of the low, really it is. And he's made the film that is arguably in probably most people's top three superhero movies, full stop.
It's tremendous. Yeah.
You know, it's brilliant. And we've mentioned Taika Waititi as well. Ryan Coogler, you could say, was, you know, he'd only made, the only big movie he'd made previously was Creed. And he'd only made one movie before that as well.
Hard to tell whether he lent that a particular... He did Fruitvale Station.
Fruitvale Station, that's right.
I love that. That was
Exactly. Yeah. So but from Fruitvale Station to Black Panther is... And the stuff that is right in that movie is the stuff that is real. It is the you know, where Killmonger is coming from, what his views are, how that impacts on the story. That is what works really well in Black Panther. And the same for Black Widow, directed by Kate Shortland, who directed Somersault previously. And all the stuff at the beginning is pure her. All of the, you know, the intimate moments with Natasha at the very beginning are really, really lovely and really
part of the film actually.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely is.
Have you seen Somersault?
It's beautiful.
It's really good. I never understood what happened to Abbie Cornish from Somersault after Somersault.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's my own mistake, but I never even thought about what happened to the director. But I mean, it's like 20 years ago.
Yeah, it is. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, and it's a really good movie. And I remember, I'm pretty sure I reviewed it, but I remember covering it and thinking, where did this come from? And the same with the actress.
Yeah.
I did not know Sam Worthington was in it, which is interesting. But I mean, it is interesting where these people come from and they take on the big roles.
But what Marvel Disney need to be doing is basically letting them do their thing more. Because when they do their thing, that's the good bit of the movie.
But they won't, because
I know.
they have to turn out a product. They're happy to have someone come along and put the different sauce in the burger, but the burger's the same. So even if someone says the best thing about that burger is the sauce, they're still not going to go, let's let the guy who made the sauce make the burger. I mean, it's I'm stretching it a little bit here.
I see where you're making me hungry.
No, I see where you're going.
I'm just see where you're going. I don't necessarily agree with that logic, but
it doesn't make the best movies. But you're probably right that it makes the most consistent product.
Unfortunately, yeah. that's where we're going for.
Yeah. But on the forums, user Raimondo put it in a way that really made me laugh, which was that, like, if they're going to hire indie talent, they need to free them from having to include a sky castle crashing to the ground in a shower of video game cutscenes. Yes.
Yeah.
100%. Yes.
Yeah, you do have to look at some of these. I mean, they are indie directors, but they are asked to do some things.
Yeah, surrounded by men in suits.
Yeah, pushed out by committee zone, told what to do to a certain extent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got to have some kind of backbone to stand up and say no. And if you do, it gets you fired. A bit like Edgar Wright
and Edgar Joe Wright. Cornish. Yeah, absolutely. The project that they reportedly spent 20 years developing before it was Ant-Man, their dream was finally realized. Mm. And then it was taken off them.
Yep.
Which is just crushing. I would love to see Edgar Wright's Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Ant-Man for me was a bit mid-tier.
I agree.
It was meant to be though, wasn't it?
I think it could have been closer to Guardians. I think it could have been a bit sharper and funnier. And the second one, even more mid-tier. I enjoyed
the second one a bit more than the first one, I have to say. But I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why. Maybe I was in a better mood at the time.
Over the anger over what happened to the original director.
Yeah, that might actually be it. I was resentful towards it.
I mean, someone's pointed out, well, we got 3D Blu-ray Bunker. He said wasn't one of the biggest names in the MCU, Kenneth Branagh. It's interesting. Thor. Yeah, thinking about that, I'm not sure I looked at Thor and went, oh, that's a Kenneth Branagh movie.
It really is not. The only bit about it that is a Kenneth Branagh movie is the bit where Chris Hemsworth is naked and you see his bum. Like, that's what makes it a Kenneth Branagh. This is just facts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, but this is what Kenneth Branagh likes to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. They nab these new directors and they get them to do stuff, but they probably won't. They probably won't be able to do anything other than mess with the source, and we'll just have to do with that. But I am interested to see whether we get different vibes from Eternals and Shang-Chi. And the new Thor is the same guy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Ragnarok. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe he'll have a bit more free rein to go wild. Probably not, but, you know. But
it was, I mean, Thor 3 was one of the best received movies of Phase 3?
Yeah.
Phase 3. So, again, if anybody...
Slightly different though, wasn't it?
Yeah. But the same with the Russo brothers. You know, like, Winter Soldier was so well received that they gave the Russo brothers all the important movie. And they did a great job with it.
Yeah.
So hopefully,
yes,
it could be a similar trajectory if that's what Taika Waititi wants to do. Like, he might be like, nah, I'm done with it now. I've done my bits.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here. But
yeah.
I'm along for the ride. It's a good lineup. I just think that maybe the year has been the pause everyone needs. Because I think that if I were to go dial myself back to Endgame, I'm not even sure I wanted a Spidey movie to follow up Endgame. I think I was happy to take a break.
Yeah.
Such a momentous occasion. I'm not sure I needed anything after that. So maybe this unintended year and a half pause, or longer. It's longer. When was Endgame? 19?
Mm.
And we're 21. It must have been summer 19. So
yeah.
2 years.
April 19, I think.
April 19, so it's over 2 years, and we've landed here, and I'm ready for them to roll these out. Probably not going to see them in the cinema, but I'm ready for them to roll them out and make the money off Disney. They appear to be doing it. Was it 80 million they got off Disney Plus?
I think 60, but yeah.
60 million. I mean, it's nothing to be...
It's turned out to be worth their while, basically. And I think, yeah, people are saying that, like, oh, is this the end of cinema? I don't think so. I don't think so. But I do think it is the start of parallel releases.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see way more of that. because Black Widow both did well in the cinema and did well for Disney Plus. So I think that's probably the pattern that they're going to look at trying to sustain, at least for the foreseeable future.
I think it's the best way of doing it. And they can't do it any other way. And I think the idea of releasing it a couple of days early in the cinema is not a bad shout either.
Absolutely.
But by and large, they can't release it much later on Disney Plus, much later. They can't do it 3 months because otherwise people are just not going to pay for it.
There's ways around it, isn't there?
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean, Simon. No idea what you're talking about. So I agree. What about you, Simon? Do you think you're sticking around for the next few?
Spidey, probably. It kind of depends on when these things are actually released, whether or not I'll make the effort to go to the cinema, because the presentation here is very, very good, you know. My local Odeon down in Epsom is only okay, you know. So if I can't get the HDR or the Dolby Atmos, then why would I want to spend money going to see it? I'd rather wait and see it on the full system here. Yeah. But you know, that's not saying I won't get them. If I can review them, even better.
Noted.
No, I think I've been lumbered with Marvel, haven't I? I think I've reviewed the last four or five Marvel.
You do all the TV shows, don't you?
Yeah, well, the Marvel that's board. Fine.
I have seen a lot of Marvel, and maybe more than I wanted to.
Yeah, I think you do. Simon does the discs,
and yeah.
You do the TV shows. I don't know how that happened, because for three phases, I think I covered everything. I saw them religiously at the cinema. Yeah.
And now you hate Marvel because you love DC so much.
No, yes, just wrong. But anyway, why don't we get Zack Snyder to direct some Marvel?
That would be
something. Interesting, wouldn't it? Turn the colour down a bit, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I haven't got the right screen shape for it.
That would truly set the internet on fire. They need to do that.
Do what they did in the comics, do a Marvel DC crossover.
Man, that would... There was one point where Disney were looking to acquire DC because the imprint was failing, the comics were failing, and Warner Brothers weren't sure if they were willing to, you know, keep propping them up, basically. And Disney have a great line in propping up comics with poor sales, because basically they're using Marvel comics at the moment as advertising for their movie for TV shows. But it never happened. But if that had happened in that timeline, in that section of the multiverse, we've got Captain America fighting Superman.
Well, it is something interesting to explain to the kids to have to split their superheroes. We take it for granted because you know we're DC and Marvel camps. Makes no sense to kids. They're like, "What do you mean? Why can't Batman team up with Spider-Man? What do you mean? Why can't I play with both at the same time?" You know, it's like no, keep your DC and your Marvel separate because the studios tell you to.
Just a couple of years ago, as a stocking filler, I was given a set of superheroes, like clearly knockoffs from China that cost pennies. And in this pack of superheroes were Captain America, the Hulk, Spider-Man, and Batman.
I think I've seen that set.
Awesome.
But I think that's what's got me in it for the duration, the kids. They haven't seen all of phase 1, 2, and 3, and I can't wait to watch them all. And I hope by the time they're ready to watch and really enjoy them, we have a decent phase 4 and, you know.
Mine haven't seen a single MCU movie yet, but we have done the first two Spider-Man movies, and those were a hit. Let me tell you, a hit. So at some point, we'll end up there, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
That, I think, probably rounds off the discussion quite nicely at 1:09. Look at this.
Yeah, but we've got loads of stuff to cover. We need the competition prize.
That's fine. We'll race through that. I think we've done exceptionally well.
15 minutes later.
Before we go into the podcast exclusive competition, there was, as always, a poll up on Patreon to find out which was our patrons' favorite phase of MCU movies, and perhaps unsurprisingly, by a mile, it was phase three. But only phase three and phase one got any votes at all. Nobody, no love for phase two. Nobody wants any of that. You know, Iron Man 3 to Age of Ultron. Nah, we can live without like 90%. Guardians is in there. That's it. But the comments below were an interesting mix of, you know, obviously phase three was the culmination of 10 years of filmmaking and build up and what an achievement it is. And even if you don't like the movies, you have to admire the. And the other side was, I really do not care about, like, hardly anyone answered this poll, by the way. People, there are a lot of people out there who just don't care about the MCU and about Disney. That's a legitimate standpoint, but I think it's probably something that it's an underrepresented opinion. And we've just spent an hour talking about Marvel. But there are people out there, weird, twisted people, who don't like comic books or comic book movies. And I feel sad for them. I feel sad that the child inside them has died.
No.
On that note, Kaz, what's the podcast competition question?
The competition question to win a copy of Ghost in the Shell, the Scarlett Johansson one, is which legendary Japanese writer, director, editor, actor co-starred in Ghost in the Shell? And from the answers, you'll be able to tell that it probably wasn't the not Japanese director of Ghost in the Shell and the not Japanese star of Ghost in the Shell. But, you know,
I think even if you hadn't put the options up there, Kaz, I think that the answer is obvious, even if you haven't. Like, who is the actor who does that stuff? It's him.
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out.
I truly hope that you've enjoyed listening to us whitter on about Marvel for an hour. It has been a pleasure to have you with us. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And also, you can get notifications. Same old, same old. If you're listening at your leisure, please leave us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, all of the worst social media on the internet. Most importantly, go to avforums.com and engage with the debate. There will be a podcast. There already is a podcast discussion thread up, and there will be a podcast specific posting late this evening. So come along and tell us how wrong we were. Okay. I think that's it. I am Tom Davis. Thank you for joining us. We will see you for the regular podcast next Wednesday. And until then, I guess it's time to say, from Simon and Kaz,
stay fresh, cheese bags.
Sort it.
Stay fresh and sort it, cheese bags. Good night.